الحمد لله رب العالمين، الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا المرسلين وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. Last time we went through the discussion of the first source of law, which is the Quran, okay? And we went through some key aspects of the Quran from the point of view of its collection, okay? Or what sometimes people refer to as compilation. Not only that, we went through the definition of the Quran itself, and we went through the Quranic script with the different, we know the compilation was at Abu Bakr's time, how it continued at the time of Uthman when he copied that, sent that to the different areas, and the different harfs, what is known as the seven styles of recitation of Quran and the recurrent readings amongst them. Then we went through certain points like, does it have a zahiri meaning and batini meaning, like the and we refuted that. That's a misunderstanding, of course. And we went through some points about what is the muhkamat and the mutashabihat, which is referred to in the text.
We didn't go through, we are supposed to go through.
I think we went through just, in simple terms, we said that, okay, maybe we just,
no.
We can go through it again. Alright,
we didn't go through. We touched it last, and next time we'll go.
Right, okay, we can
Am
go
I
through
right?
it. He was not here last week, other brothers were here. Okay, so today we can go through that and we'll go through some other what is left in the science. Or Ulumul Quran is a big area, right? But when it comes to Usul, there are certain fundamentals which are needed to appreciate the subject. So I'm going through what I think is most relevant, right, in this area. So we'll go through Asbab al-Nuzul, that is important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the circumstances of revelation and how does that impact the rules, does it have an impact or not, and we will go through the issue of abrogation, okay, what is known as nasikh and mansukh, the abrogation and abrogation, yes, right, so abrogation is an important discussion, because of course there is a lot of confusion about that and all these types of things. So last time we also went through, you know, the difference between gradual revelation and gradual implementation. We went through sort of the two main arguments, the use of Qamar and Riba, okay, and we refuted that. Because these are modernist arguments which interfere in the understanding, which are usuli discussions in origin, to refute them. They are usuli discussions when we want to refute their point. So it is important to know. So once we've completed that, there are other elements of the Quran which we will lay at a later date, we will probably go through, like issues of Aam, Mutlaq, Muqayyid, Amin Khas, okay. All of these things which are to do with linguistic things, really, in the text. But they are generic, they are not only related to the Quran, they are related to all the texts. So they are related also to the Hadith. That is why we will cover them later on, you know, in a different discussion. Today we can go through the first thing, is about the Muhkamat and Mutashabihat. Once we have completed the Quran section, we will go into the Sunnah. Okay. So, about the Muhkamat and Mutashabihat. There is a verse in the Quran where Allah said in Surah Al-Imran, verse 7. It is in it of verses that are entirely clear, Muhkamat. Okay? And they are the foundations of the book. And others which are Mutashabihat, not entirely clear. Right? Sometimes people interpret Mutashabihat to mean grey areas. Right? But in fact, that is a misnomer in the way that it is translated. You say something is in a grey area, that is not best. That is not the best description. Grey area means that it is neither here nor there. You do not know. Right? That is the inference when somebody is to say that. Also, the same, there is a hadith which people are, which is related to the Mutashabihat again, where people refer to and use the same translation. It says, Al-halalu bayin wal-haram bayin. The halal is clear and the haram is clear. In between them, if they are the mutashabihat, okay, and people refer to that as the grey area. So we have to be careful. In fact, the mutashabihat, the meaning intended in the verse here, and in fact also in the hadith, means the areas which are need, they are not clear in the meaning, okay, meaning there is possibility of difference of opinion. They are open to interpretation. Okay, that is what in fact it means here. So for example, certain verses وَحَلَّ وَحَرَمُ الرِّبَى, it's clear, it is muhkamat, there is no issue of interpretation here, okay? However, when we look at the verses, some of them may be related to belief, some of them may be related to ahkam sharia, okay, like when it talks about and wipe the head, for example, for wudu, it is mentioned in the Quran, but it is not entirely clear. The scholars debated it. What does it mean? The whole of the head, a quarter of the head, a part of the head, right, for the masah, for the wudu. So there is differences. Some say one quarter. Okay, there are different views on that because it is the mutashabih part. Okay, or if we look at the verse which says, you know, wasariku, and the male and female thief cut off their hands, it is muhkama, it is clear, there is not open to interpretation here, right? But if you look at the verse, if you have been in contact with women, i.e. la mastumul nisa, okay, and you do not find water, make them, again, it is open to interpretation, so it is known as the mutashabih part, okay? Also, there are certain verses which are not entirely clear from their, just their linguistics. For example, when it talks about, and the face of your Lord full of majesty, when it talks about the elements with Allah, or wayadullah, the hands of Allah, okay, or from our handiwork, all of these things cannot be, if we look at the linguistic meaning, cannot be reconciled with the issue of that Allah is beyond the reality, and He is unlike reality, He is unlike human beings, and He is unlike anything in the reality. Therefore, we must, they may have an apparent meaning which would be impossible if we were to take it, right? Therefore, we need to see that there is either a shariat, or if there is a qarina to link it, to give it another meaning, okay? So, a metaphorical meaning. So, you know, often like the hadith which says the hand of Allah is over their hand. It does not mean physically here. It cannot mean that, because that is in every contract. Here it means that Allah's acceptance, right? Sometimes yad, hand, can also mean power. So when we say tabbat yada abi lahbin wa tab, it can also be interpreted as perish the power of Abu Lahab, the only hand, right? Similarly here, so yad, it has more than one meaning. So we have to look at that. So those are also included within the subject of what is known as the mutashabiha, okay? What we people call as the ambiguous. Okay, yes, because they are not necessarily absolutely clear, right? They are not necessarily absolutely clear. So sometimes people debate them, right? So some people, like the Zahiri brothers, they say, yes, you believe that Allah has a yad, a hand, okay? But it is different to the hands in the reality. Okay, and the other people say, no, it is metaphoric. So there is possibility in these guru matters to have differences. So it is not part of the muhkamah, it is not part of the blatantly obvious things, right? Whereas the other issues of belief, qul huwallahu ahad, say Allah is one, it is a blatant meaning. There is no possibility of difference in that, okay? So that is simply the terminology here. You will find it sometimes, people say, does the verse within the mutashabihat or not, yeah? So it means that, is it a clear meaning within that or not, or is it, you know, open to interpretation? So that is the only issue. To realize. Also the hadith, again, just to clarify, when it says in between them there is mutashabihat, and again there is an indication in the hadith which many people miss. It says, and some people are aware of them, or some people are aware of it. Okay?
Mutashabihat too.
Yes, because it says al halalu bayyin wal haramu bayyin.
That hadith, but I think not about
not
Quran.
In the verse, they're not in the Quran, but I'm saying that the Quran. That. The Quran is simply the meaning, so we can understand from the text that there are certain clear verses, certain verses which need interpretation. But the hadith also, just to clarify, because people link the two subjects together.
I think that is the subject is different.
Yes, it is different with the subject of
halal, haram, and mutashabihat.
No, it is the same.
But Quranic verses, those Quranic verses without mutashabihat, they are certainly very, very, I think there is very less possibility to ascertain the meaning of
No, that is not true.
That is something hidden or something very different.
We're not saying it just means open to interpretation, like la mastumun nisa. It has more than one meaning, so it is
not mutashabihat.
That is not mutashabihat. This is the misunderstanding and misnomer. In fact, there are two main opinions about those Alif Lam Mim and all those things. One meaning is that it is knowledge is only with Allah, so it is not mutashabihat. Mutashabihat meaning knowledge is with interpretable.
It can be interpreted. That can be interpreted is only more than one way.
That's right.
That is mutashabihat.
Yes. And the other view is basically that it is not it is the, just the title of the surah or part of the title of the surah. So there are two views, in fact, right? Some say it is knowledge is with Allah, and you will find in different.
And some people come with something on their knees, like the that's another issue. Some may be in a correct path, some may be in a very wrong path.
Yeah, but in reality, those things are just part of the title of the Alif Lam. It is just part of the title.
You come with something, so not necessarily what people are coming with is.
Yes, we have to evaluate it. What they have, what argument they have, what evidence they have on this point. Yeah. So people refer to that, because of a misunderstanding to the mutashabihat verses. That is not mutashabihat. Is like when it's open to interpretation. That is what it means, not the qat'i meaning. Yeah, things which are qat'i meaning, kul huwa Allahu ahad, for example, not open to interpretation. Or cut off the male and female thief's hand. That is not open to interpretation.
So we can say then we can also
say zanni meaning. Yeah, we can use that term. We have already sorted with that. That it is qat'i in riwayah, but zanni meaning, right? So it is open to interpretation. Now, of course, the terminology in hadith, when the issue of mutashabihat, the hadith they quote, it is different from the point of view of that hadith is not talking about the Quranic verses specifically, but it's talking about in general, but includes them, because it talks about in general about the halal and haram, which includes the halal and haram mentioned in the Quran, right? So it says the halal is clear and the haram is clear. In between them, there are things which are unclear, mutashabihat. Some people are aware of them, and save your deen and save your honor, and whosoever falls into them has committed haram. Okay, and then it continues and it says every king has a hima, a protected area, and the hima of Allah are the commands and the prohibitions, or his prohibition. So it is like raising a sheep next to the protected area. They can pull into the protected area. Then it continues saying that there is an organ in the body. If it is good, the person will be good. If it is bad, the person will be bad. وَهُوَ قَلْبٌ. And this is the mind, which we said this is the heart, but the meaning is the mind. Yeah. So anyway, in this hadith, there is a clear indication that, in fact, the hadith can be interpreted in two ways. We are interested in one aspect of that. One way is that, because it says, and some people are aware of them, or of it, means that it is the areas of difference of opinion. That if you do not know the hukam, then for you to do it and fall into it, you have committed haram. This is the issue. Because it says some people are, so for some people it is not mutashabih, it becomes bayin. Yeah, for the mujtahid, for the one who has adopted that view based on knowledge, then it is an issue that it becomes clear to him. Right? So for example, let us look. If it is that you have, you read a verse in the Quran that when you touch the woman or make contact with them and you cannot find water, make them. And now, you have touched your wife's hand. And it is, you had wudu, and it's time for salah, and you are not sure what it means. Okay? Here it means you cannot just do anything. You must find out what is the rule. You must adopt a rule. Okay? You cannot just do anything. Right? So you must find out from any mujtahid what is his view. Right?
That's away from the,
in that view. It depends which view you adopt. This is the point.
I don't have any
touching head or having intimacy.
No, touching. Physically. That is the view of my view. Right? Yeah, of course. Because the touching here can't be metaphoric in my opinion, in the opinion of Shafi'i and Shafi'i and many scholars. That if for you to say it is metaphoric, then you would need ghusl, you would not need wudu. Right? Because Abu Hanifa's argument is that to touch the hand is intercourse, because he quotes Surah Maryam when Maryam said, how can I have a child and no man has touched me, using the same word. Okay? Now, Maryam's meaning here is intercourse, and for intercourse you need ghusl. you don't need wudu.
There is the issue of having no water, na.
Yes, but the having no water, it gives the hukam of wudu, because it says, if you don't have water and you touch the hand of a woman, make wudu, make tayammum. So this means implicitly within that is that if you touch the hand of the woman, your wudu is broken. Why would you need to make tayammum? So the hukam is about wudu, not only tayammum. In fact, the hukam is about wudu, right? So actually, you have to, and this shows you the point. You have to adopt the hukam shari'i on that. You have, most of us on, do not, we are following the ahkam without actually knowing the rules.
No, but other things coming from this, if you touch and there is no water, you make tayammum.
Yes.
That means it breaks intercourse.
Yes.
And there is no water.
Yes.
So getting pak also with the hukam. Then, in place of getting ghusl, till you get the water.
Yeah, no, but the context is about wudu. This is the issue. In the verse, the context is about wudu, not about ghusl. So, but there is two arguments, fine. There is an argument to say it is a metaphoric meaning that can include intercourse, okay. So, it is just included, it basically means intercourse, that your wudu is broken. Of course, your ghusl will be broken as well. So, you would need to do tayammum for both, for ghusl and for wudu, in that case, right. But here, now, most people are used to, when we follow the ahkam, to follow in a very general way without following the details of it, yeah. So like in Salah, it is necessary, like for us now, muhkamat mutashabihat, right? In the mutashabih areas, for us to adopt an opinion, this is, we will discuss that in this discussion of ijtihad and taqleed. Otherwise, we are not following anyone. And we are falling into what the hadith says, we are falling into doing an action without knowing the rule. Which one do you follow? You cannot follow both. There are two opposite meanings and there are two opposite opinions. Right? So you must follow one. So that means this means that it is an obligation on the believer that he adopts the hukum shari'i from a mujtahid. Okay? And in detail, at least in the fara'id and in the shurut. Okay? In the obligations and the conditions. So for example, in salah, you must adopt in the pillars of prayer, what validate and invalidate the prayer, meaning the obligation. Okay, there are different views in that also. Okay. Those pillars of prayer you must adopt from a mujtahid. Also, you must adopt its conditions, and the condition for salah is wudu. So you must know what is wudu. Do you need intention for wudu or not? According to Abu Hanifa, you do not need intention. If you have a bath and you do not make wudu, in Abu Hanifa's madhab, you have wudu automatically. And according to Shafi'i and other scholars, no, you need tarteeb and niyyah, or condition of the wudu, the obligation. Without them, the wudu is void. So therefore, when I have a bath, I do not have automatically wudu. I have to, within, after the bath, do the wudu, especially with tarteeb, with order, and with intention. Also, in Abu Hanifa's madhab, if you jump into a swimming pool, automatically
you have a kind of tarteeb in while bathing.
Yes, so but yes. So while
that bath also include wudu also.
Yes, but that would be separated. The bath would be separate, and the wudu would be within it. So you can do that. I do that sometimes when you're having a bath. You just make the intention, and then you do the actions of wudu. But you must do them in order. At least the fara'id. Yes. At least the fara'id. The, you know, face, the arms, the masa, and the feet. Okay. Obligation. So the issue is that there are two different views. So it is mutashabihat area. You must adopt a view. Otherwise, you're not following anyone. You can't just say, "Well, I don't worry about it." Yeah, you have to worry about it. So similarly, in the ahkam of wudu, of course, you must know what nullifies the wudu, right? Does touching your woman nullify the wudu or not, right?
It's touched by it.
Yeah, exactly. So they are now details. It is not just so general. There are details in the hukam. That what does it mean touching? Touching does not mean normally by the outer of the hand. It means by the intentional touch. Touching does not mean that she touches you. It means you touch her.
Yeah.
So if she does that to you, it doesn't break your wudu necessarily. But if you intentionally touch her, right? So it's to touch and not to be touched. Anyway, there is a lot of details and a lot of difference also.
It should be known because it's a daily activity.
That's right. So for example, like for me, that is why in...
suppose you made wudu and there is time when you were lying down and she came and
Yeah, exactly. So you
you didn't ask.
That's right. That's right. So here now, even in these areas, there's a lot of difference, right? So we must adopt. So for example, I adopt the view of Sheikh Taqi. He has written a book, Ahkam al-Salah. It is translated in English. It is simple just to follow that if you do not know any other rules until you study the matter. Because in there, it gives you all the ahkam, at least the obligation, the condition, and these matters are in discuss. So he discusses this, to touch or to be touched. Also, there are certain people who believe, because the Prophet kissed Aisha and then he prayed, that it means that it does not include the wife and the mahram. Okay? But this hadith is specific to the Prophet. Because there is a discussion now of outweighing of evidences. That the text is general, it cannot be made specific, by an action. It just means that this action was specific to the Prophet itself, because the text is from the Quran. So there is a debate about that, right? So, anyway, in this matter, simple issue is that you must be, this is what the meaning of taqwa is in fact. Taqwa means to be mindful that you follow the ahkam sharia, at least in it. In the mandubat, we do not need to be too worried. Okay, that we can adopt those from different scholars anyway in origin. And those are things which are recommended. But at least in the basic things, halal, haram, obligations, prohibitions, and especially in the fulfillment of fara'id, we must know the condition. Okay, like for example, many people I see who don't follow the madhab of Abu Hanifa, and they may follow other madahil, like Shafi and other people, their prayer is invalid. Because when they pray, right, they, after the ruku, after the sujood, it depends who they follow, but in many opinions, you must sit. You cannot just go straight up. If you go straight up, then it invalidates a firm position.
Reality is that in India, 95% or more than 95% people don't follow anybody. They follow the mask.
Yeah, they follow the imam. No, in fact, they follow they follow what they have been taught. So, for example,
they don't know there are different opinions.
They don't know
what the people are doing.
That's right.
Because they are not educated.
Even if they don't know there are different opinions, doesn't matter. As long as they know the opinion they are following correctly. So, for example, when I used to be at madrasa, we learned a book, Talimul Islam. This book. Now, this is Hanafi fiqh. Right, in there, it gives you the fundamentals of salah, it gives you the issues which nullify the wudu, these things. Yeah, so that is, you make
this is a well-known book, it is even taught in all the Hanafi madrasas.
Yes, all of them.
And regarding this, all the Muslims, all the Sunni Muslims, either from...
Devbandi.
And you know, even every kind of Muslims, either Bareli or Devbandi, they know that they are Hanafis.
Hanafis,
it is well accepted, even the Jahil. Most jahil person from Barelvi, they used to debate means they know 100% that we are Hanafi, but the thing is that but just they know this, but they don't know Ahkam, and they just imitate the imam of the mosque. That's what they are doing. If they are means fasting their prayer, they blatantly follow them blindly.
That's right. So the issue is that it depends. Even at that time, even though I was not very practicing. But I knew that, this is what nullifies. If I have flowing blood, does it nullify the wudu or not? These masail are all discussed. Right. And the issue of touching is not so, because here people will not have discussed it, because the common opinion is that it's irrelevant. It's not included within the discussion of wudu, because only the scholars discuss that, really, or people of knowledge.
A book written for the child is not needed to be discussed.
Yeah, and even for the normal man, the layman, it is not necessary to tell him the area of difference. You just tell him the view. So if somebody asks me, how do you pray? Should I pray? I will just teach him the prayer. Okay, if he wants to know more, and it's good to tell him the evidence. But in origin, you can teach him the hukam. So that is what they are doing. They are just teaching you the rule. And within that, they are not going to teach in the areas of mutashabi. They will just say, otherwise you will confuse the people anyway.
Yeah.
They will say, this is the rule. Okay, that ghusl, you don't need intention. Okay. I used to know that. So I used to go swimming at school. And when I used to come out, I've got wudu. I used to know that at that time, because I was taught that, right? That in the books that we studied, that this is, you do not need intention. Also, like the wudu issue, you know, touching the hand is irrelevant for them because it doesn't have break the wudu. But for example, for the other madahir, it is an issue like for the zahiris, like you brothers are zahiri in your faith, okay, you are salafi. So you have to look at what is the zahiri madhab's view. They have a view on that. They take the literal meaning of more than the metaphorical meaning. So their view is physical touch, right? So we have to look at what their argument is or what you have adopted. Or if you have not adopted, that is why for me, even in later on, when I started to gain knowledge about the Hanafi madhab and what I was following, it became slightly confusing because I did not know which mujtahid I am following. Am I following a Shaybani or am I following Abu Hanif? Because Shaybani and Abu Hanif's views differ. Or am I following Shaybani or Sarkati? Sarkati and Shaybani's views differ. I became like somewhat confused about that. Also in the Hanafi Usul, I started to have doubts in the way that they derive things. They allow the rational illa and qiyas from the mind, even in ibadat and all these things. So I became unconfident in following that view, so I changed to follow a view. At least I know it's from a mujtahid who's got a good usul, and at least it is derived correctly.
You know, in Hanafi, this is well accepted, even general masses, that these ahkam are very complex, and these scholars, they used to teach them, taught them that it's very difficult to understand.
Yeah, they want to keep the masses ignorant. That is a very dangerous idea. When they try to say that knowledge is fard kifaya, not fard ain, this is a very dangerous argument. What they have tried to make is they state that
if I know it's okay and I'm not teaching, I'm not doing anything haram.
Exactly. Knowledge, in fact, there's two types of knowledge. The knowledge of knowing the ahkam sharia for your life is for the aim, for every Muslim, undoubtedly. So
that
to know,
is relevant to your,
life. That's right. So whether if you're a doctor, you must know the ahkam of medicine. If you're a teacher, you must know the ahkam of teaching. You must know within your life what are the, otherwise you can't follow Allah. Is this a simple thing? If we are obligated to follow Allah, to follow the ahkam from Allah and to attain Jannah according to that, then how can we follow it if we don't know the ahkam to our life? It's impossible, right? So therefore the matter becomes that it is an obligation to know. Now what these people do is they try and keep the masses ignorant. Because if you give the masses knowledge, they will question you. And then you will become in a tricky position. And most of their knowledge themselves is weak. If you ask them 5 questions, I could write for you 5 questions. If you ask them, they will be dumbstruck and they will not be able to answer anything about those areas. And that would put a doubt in their leadership. If you ask them questions they do not know, their leadership becomes doubted. So it's about power at the end of the day.
Even some people want to take interest that we should be very clear in these accounts. But what happened is they left so much confused, and there is a problem in their heart always that either we are following the right thing or not.
Yes.
If they try to search more and go into the detail, they just stuck in the detail or in confusion.
One thing should be clear: there can be more than one opinion.
Yes.
And if you are following one opinion, established opinion, so you are not wrong.
Yes. So this is the issue, that until you change your view, you may taklid, unless you are mujtahid, to a opinion, right? As long as that opinion is valid and is from a mujtahid and you are sure of that, that is fine. Okay, there is no problem. So even if you start going into the depth of these matters, there is nothing wrong, because at least it will give you the knowledge on which the opinion is based, which is better. So that is a recommended knowledge. But what I am saying here is people do not have sometimes the fard knowledge. The fard knowledge is that, you know, which is apparent from this example of touching, right? That you are not put to think like that. You are not put to think in detail, okay? That what is the condition, okay, for the wudu? Is the intention included or not? You are not put to think in a detailed way. You are put to think, oh, just make these basic things and that's it. That is not the correct thing. That is not actually what what is allowed. What is allowed is that you adopt the view and you know the rules. It is like driving a car, you're doing anything. You must know the rules. This is the function, this is the issue, this is what you must do, right? Otherwise you will crash the car. Similarly here, you must know these are the fundamentals. You may not know how they are derived, like driving a car. You don't need to know how does the engine connect to the other parts of the car and all of that. You don't need to know those things. You just need to know how to drive it, in the simple sense, right?
This is the biggest thing I learned here.
Yeah.
Because I had always from the moment I started with Ali Abhi.
Yes.
I think there is more than 100 places,
yes,
the hadith where there is a discussion of Ramadan.
Yes.
And how could be anybody good who knows this and it don't do this?
That's right, yeah.
So I used to feel all the wandis and all, even if they are, why don't they do? If I am a lay person and go and see this is in hadith, why don't they see?
Yeah. Very simplistic view.
This, so, and the solution of this, yes, there can be difference of an opinion, and this is not bad.
Yeah.
It gave me so much tranquility in my heart, I can't say.
That's right. It is important because
although these people, Jamaat Islami people, also say this.
Yes,
this is a difference of opinion, but they,
no,
they don't have the explanation.
Yeah,
we don't have the depth, yeah, in usul. And
what they intend to do is, they don't do in the pachra, do your work. Okay?
Yeah.
Because you don't have expertise. If you will go on the details, some of the of your people will go, or you will get the smaller chunk to choose with. So like even in Tablighi Jamaat, they say, if we don't discuss on your madhab, okay, you come and do dawah and say only what we want you to say. So this is only to keep taking aside.
Without explaining the madhab.
Without explaining.
And this is the issue, is that inside, even if you go to somebody who is Deobandi, who is deep in knowledge, there are few people like that, like the Nadwis. Then they will explain the matter if they have good knowledge. They can explain ijtihad and taqleed. And I have seen them refute all the Salafi arguments, right, in debate on how they about ijtihad and taqleed. They can, but you will find them few people like that. In terms of the mainstream people do not have, at least they do not explain it in that way. They just say don't question and follow us and all those types of things. And similar thing probably with Jamaat Maududi, they probably understood this subject. But in terms of current contemporary leaders, they are not explaining it. Just to explain it makes the issue clear, then it is just so simple and people do not become confused. Okay. For example, the simplistic view is that everything is muhkamat, not mutashabihat. This is the problem. For the Ahli Hadith, they have an inclination that everything should be muhkamat.
And what they know is...
And not mutashabihat. But even Allah Himself has said in the Quran. I know, but from the simple man, I'm not talking about the ones who are deep in knowledge, even in Ahlul Hadith. It becomes simplistic like that. No, but it should be clear. Everything should be clear. Everything should
even
be clear.
Even if it is written in Hadith, it's correct.
That type of thing, yeah.
So you get the translation of one Hadith and you are ready to argue.
Yeah, that is the simplistic.
You are ready to argue any level of the alim. Yeah, I know it's written. You can offer two rakats of Sunnah before Maghrib.
Yes.
Just before the Jamaat and Adhan.
Yes.
Okay. You know only the translation of one hadith and the way it is like it. Now you are to fight. Not even the Arabic, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly the text. You know the meaning. This is what I understood. This is what they are teaching to the mass. That is why the mass and the hadith is very bad. Haram.
That's why they become very angry. This is the problem. It is the fruit. They are doing something which is good in terms of trying to breed knowledge, but the consequence of that is if you do not do this properly, you will turn people into what we call extremists in the correct meaning of the term. I.e., they will go to an extreme in the sense of condemning people, okay, in where they should not be condemned. And in doing da'wah to their opinions as if they are enjoining ma'ruf, forbidding munkar, like that. Instead of calling to their opinion, okay, we call for our opinion, we say this is our opinion, right? But we don't do it in a way of condemnation to treat people who do not follow it as a munkar when it comes in the area of ikhtilaf. This is the problem. So even there are some extreme, like one of our brothers in Bhopal, he was Ahl Hadith and he believed, he told me, he goes, I used to believe that the Hanafis are Kafir. He said, he was that extreme. He said, I believe that they are following Abu Hanifa, they are following Allah.
Regarding Taklif, all the Hanfis are Kafir. And regarding Akidah,
yes,
all the Sufis are also Kafir.
Yes,
and Sufis and...
It leads to a lot of Takfir, which is a very dangerous area. Right?
I simply said a guy, a very nice guy, I feel very sorry about that. You believe that there is one God.
Yes.
And Muhammad was the Prophet of Allah.
Yes.
So you have to follow Prophet. Now there is something said by somebody, and on the same issue there is something said by you.
The prophet. Yes.
You are following that guy, you are not following prophet.
Yes.
That means you are following that guy, that means you are doing something very bad.
Yes.
And that time he was a knowledgeable man, he understands the way I am talking is not a good time to talk to him.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That is the common argument that people use anyway. So khair, okay, so we know that, at least like coming back to the example of the touching, that we must adopt from the mutashabih, of course for the individual, that is the subject of taqleed, adoption of the ahkam. You must adopt one view, right? So if you don't know a view, then you adopt one view of the salah, including the wudu and ghusl. Because when you adopt a hukam, you must adopt it from one mujtahid in the whole masala, okay, in the whole issue.
Otherwise, you will have to become a mujtahid on some particular masala.
Yeah, if you become mujtahid, that is fine, no problem. You can follow your own view. There are some of our brothers like that. So my mushrik before, sometime I used to ask him, what opinion is that? He said, yeah, it's my own opinion. Yeah? So, he was, even in salah, he adopted from the fundamental. But he was mujtahid in his own view, so in some issues he used to follow his own opinion. That is fine, like that, you know. But until that level, until you must, there is no choice to make but to follow a scholar. And just to clarify so that we don't make a mistake, you should not nick from the scholars in one masala. Okay? Otherwise, you will end up following no one, you are following yourself. Right?
Yeah, whatever.
Yes? Because the issue becomes now, who are you actually following? If you say, let us say, if you take some of the salah from Abu Hanifa and the wudu and ghusl from Shafi, but that is one masala. Now what happened? According to Shafi, when you pray, when you touch the hand of the woman, your salah is invalid.
Salah is invalid?
Yeah, because you have no salah is invalid, because you're making salah without wudu. Isn't it? By consequence, if your wudu is invalid, your salah is invalid. By consequence, because salah is, the wudu is a condition for salah, that is why it's part of the same masala. Similarly, if you make a ghusl and you think you have wudu without intention and without tartib, and you pray salah, again your salah is invalid because your ghusl is invalid. So your wudu is invalid, right? Things like that. You see the point? So it becomes a conflict within the matter itself. So therefore, if you don't actually know who, you're not actually following anyone. You must follow one scholar in one view. There may be a scholar who combines the Shafi and Hanafi view. Mm-hmm. There may be. That is fine. But you must know him and you must know what is the view. It is possible. Of course, the scholars debate all these issues. There may be some people.
So, suppose we can follow in particular, like in Salat alone.
Yes.
But it is not necessary in zakat or some
that's
other
right.
issue.
So within
I
the
can
masala,
follow some other mustahid.
That's right. And all, even within the same masala, as long as it is not connected to the conditions and the fara'id, then you can adopt from anyone because it does not affect the validity or invalidity. Okay. So for example, to adopt a different dua, for example, or something like recommended things which are not affecting validity or invalidity, you can adopt from anyone.
Yeah.
That is not a problem because the problem only becomes when there is a conflict. And conflict will only come in the obligations and conditions.
No, suppose somebody is governing.
Yeah.
Okay. He is doing salah like this.
Yeah.
But she thought Ramadan is something very clear.
Yeah.
So why do it? What is the problem in including this?
Yeah.
This is not nullifying my salah.
Yeah.
And he started doing the Ramadan also.
Yeah.
Rest of the salah is as per the Hanafi.
Yes. No, but he cannot just do it like that. He cannot just say, oh, Rafi Adin. He must know, okay, Rafi Adin is an opinion, which is valid. And if he knows that, if he believes that it does not nullify his prayer, okay, then fine. Okay, if he believes it does not nullify his prayer, then he can add it because it's not on the validity or invalidity. But if he believes it is prohibited, okay, like for example, saying Ameen or the Hanafi, it is prohibited loudly because it is prohibited to speak over the Quran. Therefore, they should not do it because then they would be committing a sin. That is a conflict. But it's an area which is not a conflict. For example, I pray like this, but it, for me it is mubah to pray like that also. It is mubah, but it is mandu to pray like this. It's a recommendation. So I can pray like that if I want to, with the permission. This is the issue, right? So, yes, if it is not in the areas of validity, invalidity, right?
On the rules of itself, it's madhab.
Yes.
Then it's okay.
That's okay, that's fine. And you can adopt from other schools, right? If you, you know, believe. Of course, the adoption must cannot be upon an invalid basis like manfa'a, like
it
benefit.
It can be appended. It cannot be contradicted.
Yes. So, the,
if something is not there in it, you can go and take that part of the thing.
But in a way that does not contradict, yeah, and conflict. So in the recommended areas, that is fine. But also, it must be in a way that it is the adoption of the rule is correct, i.e., it is not based upon benefits.
Yeah,
and those other things. Because you could look at the other madhahib and, oh, that looks very nice, I would adopt that. Not on any of the superficial criteria. It must be on basis of trust. Okay? That you trust that is a closer view to the hukum of Allah and that is better. Okay, from
so
that
it's
point
very of clear most of the time what happens. If I am a Ahl-e Hadith,
yeah,
for me, I can take the hukum from all different ways, what is available, and if it is proved by the valid,
yeah,
it's a hukum for me. I can adopt any of them. Now, I have a choice. Like I can offer 1 rika, 3 rika, 5 rika, and 7 rika.
Yes, 4 rika.
So, whatever. And 1 rika is very easy, I am very tired. Uh-huh. I am choosing 1 rika because I am tired.
Yeah.
This,
no, no, that is not a problem. This is not what we mean about adoption of ahkam. That is implementation of ahkam. They are two different things. You understand? Adoption of ahkam is that there are two views in front of you. One says that witr is 3 raka, the other one says witr can be 1 raka. You say, that looks very good. I will adopt this view that witr can be one because it is in my benefit. That is haram. But you're talking about implementation, which is a different subject altogether. That is something permitted.
Because
witr itself, it depends on what you view it. If you view it as a recommended matter, okay, or that to follow 3, because the general opinion is it's recommended to follow 3, not obligation. To follow 1 is mubah. So what you are doing is not in the area of halal and haram. Then you can use tiredness as an excuse. Because tiredness can allow you to withhold from the mandub.
Somewhere in the hadith,
yes,
if among the mubah, among,
yes,
the all permitted things,
yes,
if you are choosing something easy or better for you, yes,
it's not there. The Prophet said, if there are two paths in front of you, choose what is ihsan, what is easier. That is permitted within the optional areas. Now, also here, just from the point of view, you have to get into the legal mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to build within you some usuli concepts. So when we look at things, we look at legally. So legally, there is a difference. Remember, we have discussed it previously in Nizam about the criterion for action.
Yeah.
If something is from the area of mubah to mandub or makruh, it is all within the area of permissibility, in the area of halal.
Mm-hmm.
The fard, the mandub, the makruh, and the mubah, they are all halal. Only the haram is haram. Okay? So now, within these, it is up the fard, of course, you have to do it. There is no choice. But within the other 3, makruh, mandub, mubah, it is an optional thing. Now, whatever is the excuse, yani, doesn't mean you will fall into sin. It may mean, like, for example, I am tired after maghrib, I will sleep, I don't feel like praying the 2 rakah. You're not committing a sin because in origin, the hukam is mandub. The meaning of mandub, you do it, you get reward, you don't do it, you're not sinful. That is why legally it is not a problem because it is in fact then not doing it does not incur sin. Only in part not doing it incurs sin. You see the point? So yes, we can say, so therefore if you want to talk accurately, we can say it is better for you. It is better for you and it's closer, better for your taqwa and your piety and your closeness to Allah for you to do those things. Yes, we can say that, but we cannot say, and you cannot therefore also judge people on that basis.
Yeah.
So for example, you cannot judge taqwa. For example, if, let us say theoretically, if we know a man, he never prays taraweeh. Okay? We cannot judge that he is not muttaqi. Right? You cannot judge it. That is a wrong judgment. Legally, it is incorrect.
Yeah. People, right? Used to judge taqwa from dari also.
Yeah, from dari.
And I just, means, shut down. So our one
they
senior brother,
now
you are now modernist.
So he told me, yeah, although he had the means, some people have that view that it's okay if you have short.
Yeah.
And most of them used to keep short dadis before sometimes. Now they have grown up.
Yeah.
So he said that it is okay, but it's more part of taqwa. So I think we will have to define whether is it taqwa here or not.
Yeah.
I think it is not taqwa.
Yeah.
Taqwa has different meaning and dadi doesn't come in the field of taqwa.
Yes.
So I want to discuss on this topic also.
And that is a separate issue.
We'll talk on this topic separately.
But it's again one of the Mutashabihat areas.
But we should know. Because I also sometimes feel like it makes very short sometimes. Then that has it comes.
Because there is one dalil which can say that it can be a taqwa.
No. The issue is this. If you believe it is farz, you must do it. That's it. Simple. It depends. Look at the legal mentality again here. If you believe it is an obligation, then it will be related to your view of your individual taqwa, but it cannot be a criterion for the taqwa of others because it is ikhtilafi. You see the point? Meaning, individually you adopted as far, like even 10 years view is far. Okay? Now, you do it. And you view other people who are not doing it. Now, you cannot condemn them because you know it is ikhtilafi area. You cannot judge their taqwa on that. You must judge their taqwa upon the areas which are definitive, which are areas of not of ikhtilaf. Okay? So this is the point here. For yourself, yes, then in that case, if you were to leave it, if somebody views watching TV is haram and they watch it, then they are not mustaqi, they are committing sin. Because they believe it is haram and they're still doing it. They have adopted a view which is legitimate. It may be weak, but it's a legitimate view. If they believe that shaving is haram and they shave, then they are committing haram. Because it depends what you view, what you have adopted. You cannot contradict what you have adopted unless you change what you have adopted. You get the point? So all of this now again is to do with understanding usul, the principles, okay, by which we understand ijtihad, taqlid and these things. So if you adopted a rule, you should not contradict the rule.
But you saying that if that gives very bad impact to that,
Yeah, the fatwa for money and all that. We told.
I didn't see
it. Yeah, we know about that.
So you give me this much money, I'll give you fatwa according to you. From the mufti, which is well known to the court.
Yeah, it is basically shopping for fatwa, which is haram. Yeah? The Prophet has predicted that there will come a time where people will be a believer during the day and kafir by the night. Believe at night and kafir by the day, and they will sell the deen for what they could. Yeah? So it is a big warning in that. So anyway, here's a simple point here. I want to grasp. You see, you need to grasp the root concept so that you yourself can differentiate these things. Yeah? In the subject of masail, you want to discuss the masala of beard as a separate masala. Fine, but you must understand the concept which is to do with adoption and taqlid. Then the masala is a separate issue. That whether it is recommended or wajib or whatever, we can discuss that independently. And, you know, I can convince you that it is recommended and whatever is, what is the definition of it. It doesn't mean a long growth, it's after 3 days growth or whatever is below the chin. Whatever, we can debate all those things. Right, as a specific view.
But I want.
Yeah, we can. There's a very good article about that. I can send it to you. It gives you the view with all the evidence and everything about that. So that is a specific masala, yani. But we should be.
There are some issues that are more prominent in Indian society.
Yeah.
We have to be very clear.
We have to understand. Our brothers normally have written articles on most of these issues because most of our brothers are from Indian subcontinent abroad. Asian.
One
and the same issues here or same issues there.
Uh-huh.
Then, but the Bareilvi, they were all the same things are there.
One gave fatwa that all this saloon wala naid are committing haram.
Saloon wala? Oh, you mean the
naid?
Yeah, because
Babar.
They are trying to
shave.
I mean, they are shaving something Huzur Salam prohibited.
Yes.
So they are helping somebody committing haram.
So they also think for themselves miserable.
Yeah,
that we are doing something wrong.
But what can I do? What am I doing?
Yes.
This is also confusion.
Fine, you can, somebody can make that, you see, again, according to the principle, somebody can make that statement, but he should amend the statement. He should say, in my view, yeah, if somebody is a Baba, he should not do this, it is prohibited, because I view it is prohibited to shave. However, if he believes that it is not haram, according to an Islamic opinion, fine. This is what it should be corrected.
This is a mature society,
yeah,
which we don't have just now.
That's right.
And they also interpret it in a way that suppose we are not thinking it is haram, so it is not haram. And we are thinking that it is halal.
Yes.
They will put this matla in a haram or halal area.
Yeah.
That we are independent to think like that.
That's right.
Do it and don't think you are doing haram, then it is okay. You are thinking it is haram and then you are committing haram.
Yeah.
So it is not, I mean, to make...
They will not grasp the meaning of that.
Yeah, exactly, but you have to discuss things accurately. You cannot condemn the people, because what they are doing is condemning people to haram, okay? You know, there is some element of can appreciate in that, because if most of their congregation is Hanafi and Deobandi, not Hanafi in origin, they're Deobandi, then their congregation follows their fiqh, and if they discuss with them, they believe they should follow them. Fair enough, but they should not condemn absolute, because not everybody is going to follow their views. Okay, and it's not absolute, it's not a munkar. They should say it is haram in our view. So there's a distinction. When you say something is a munkar, you'll appreciate from the style in which we discuss sometimes. When we condemn something, we will condemn it harshly if it is a munkar. If it is a ikhtilaf, we will say, yes, this is our view, it is prohibited. Mm-hmm. However, you know, they are different opinions. So that is a way that is more just, correct. Yeah? Khair, okay. That is enough, at least in terms of that we have gone into taqleed discussion here more. But anyway, it's somewhat relevant to mutashabihi. The asbabul nuzul issue is important to appreciate. Okay? Sabab al-Nuzul, meaning the cause of revelation, or Asbab al-Nuzul is the plural, okay? It means the issues of the incidents or the circumstances by which the revelation came about, okay? So there's specific circumstance. Somebody came to the Prophet ﷺ and asked him a question. Then he waited and Allah revealed the verses, as an example. Yeah? So the circumstances of revelation is what is known as Asbab al-Nuzul, okay? Now, the question that comes from an Usuli point of view, and which people attempt in the modernists today, try to put doubt in this area, that is what is important to understand. They try to say that the ahkam are constricted or they are restricted for that circumstance. And they are
I want to discuss on this topic.
That's right. So here we must appreciate that that is not true. Okay? That there is certain ahkam which are, if we have to identify,
we have to identify.
Are they restricted to the circumstance or are they general?
There might be happen.
Yeah, it may be. It is possible. But most likely, many of them are generalized. And there are two real ways to identify that. Okay. The first way is that if we look at the ayat, which may have come for a specific incident, but if the wording is general, then it is general. So, if the wording is general, it is general. It doesn't matter what incident it came for. The wording is upon the Ummah as a whole. So, for example, when Hilal from the tribe of Umayyah, or bin Umayyah, came to the Prophet ﷺ and he asked the Prophet ﷺ about the issue of, he saw his wife, I mentioned the incident probably before, in bed with another man, and he came to the Prophet, what shall I do now? Because he did not have four witnesses. And the Prophet waited and Allah revealed the ayat, five ayat, about what is known as mu'alana, al-li'an, the imprecation. That now you must fool her, right? And you come and you swear by Allah that she did it, and she swears by Allah that she did not do it, unless she accepts she did it, then she will be punished for zina, of course. But if she does say that she did not do it, then in the fifth time you do that, then your nikah is broken forever. It is not divorce.
Sometimes it's so.
No, they must swear by Allah five times.
Both of them.
If
on the same time.
One will say, I swear by Allah, I saw you do it. The other will say, I swear by Allah, I did not do it. Then Allah said in the Quran, He reveals. And the fifth time, if they say that, then their marriage is broken forever. They can never remarry. It is not divorce. In divorce, for example, if you divorce your wife and she gets married again and she gets divorced, then you can remarry her. That is not the li'an, it is impossibility, it is something complete finish. Right? So it is a separate.
There is also one category of kind of divorce that.
Yeah, it is not divorce, it is called mu'alana. Yeah, it is complete removal. Right? Complete.
Most of the case, if you think,
yes.
She's doing committing some haram.
Yes.
Okay, so it's very easy for her to tell a lie.
Yes.
Because telling a lie, what she is losing is the husband.
Yeah, but here, no, then Allah says, and the curse of Allah will be upon them. This is the issue, right? So, yes, there is one aspect in the legal thing. One aspect legally, she is losing her husband, right? But from the point of view of taqwa, don't get stuck in the example. Let me explain the principle first. You are getting put in the court in front of the Muslim, right? Let me finish the example. Then you can ask. That here, the example is this. The example is just an example. We are understanding the principle. Okay, but if you want to understand the example, the issue is this, that I know your point, that yes, she can do that, yes, but that is at the end of the day up between her and Allah. She will go to hell if she does that, essentially. But normally in the Islamic society, which is a society of taqwa, even the women who commit zina admitted that to the Prophet ﷺ, and they were stoned to death, even though they had a baby,
yeah,
and they had children. There were examples of that. So, because the punishment in the dunya means that you have granted forgiveness for that, right? So if you are punished for that, Allah will not punish you. So if you truly have a fear of Allah, you will own up to that crime, right? But if you do not, then there is no way of telling. In Islam, you cannot punish them for that.
What I was saying is, from the legal point of view, whenever you will talk to an honest, you will see this is a very easy way to excuse this. No. Because if you are committing something haram,
yes.
Now, again, to lie is haram.
Yes.
So you can do another lie because if you will tell lie, you will die.
If you tell the truth, you will die. Yeah.
So to live, you tell a lie. Okay, yeah. One thing.
Yeah.
Secondly, if you're doing something like that, that means you may be in some illicit relationship with that. So you want to get off with this relationship and get married to that girl.
Yeah.
Whether is there any ruling in this? Suppose he is committing something haram with B.
Yeah.
B.
Yeah.
And
no, but it must be identified. It's only her word against yours. How do you know which one is true? This is the point. If you want to look at it legally, you cannot look at it logically. You don't look at it from logic. Your argument is from logic.
What I'm saying is separated now.
Yeah, no, but look, this is the point. From the point of view of a court. Yes, of course she can. Let me give you the point. You are the qadi. A man comes to you. Says, my wife has slept with another man, but I don't have to. And she comes and says, I have not done it. Now, who are you going to believe? At the end of the day, you are not God. You cannot judge that.
Yes.
It is your her word against you. You cannot say, I will condemn them to death or her to death based upon one testimony. The strict thing is there about two witnesses. So if there is not there, then it will be la'a mu'alana, and she is finished. Her marriage is over. She can yet be married. Of course, she can yet be married. She is separated. But if she does that, then she is condemned by Allah. And most likely,
like both can be, man is bad.
Yes.
He wants to get
rid of the man may make that up. Exactly. Yeah. The man may invent that story. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he himself will be condemned to Jahannam cursed by Allah if he does that thing. Of course, it will be a grave sin to do that. So, of course, we can't look at, when we look at things like this, we don't look at it logically. Because yes. People will argue, just look at what is the rule and that's it.
To understand the rule, then whosoever is arguing is another option.
Fine. Let us look at the principle behind it. Again, you are getting bogged down into the example. In usul, you have to be careful like that. Sometimes you can get bogged down into the example, which will divert you from the principle. Because in every example, if it is a new example to you, you will want to know all the details of it. But of course, it is important to grasp the main point of it and grasp the principle. So here, for example, also the ayah of stealing was revealed regarding the theft of the person of Majan or Rida of Safwan. Okay, so he was a man who committed theft. Then Allah revealed, okay, the verse. Now here the verse is general. It says that the male and female thief. It does not say this man from Safwan cut his hand. So it cannot be something specific to the circumstance. Yeah. So this is the first way of identifying. Also the ayat about inheritance. It came when the Ansar or somebody, someone came to the Mustafa and asked him a question. Okay, and then Allah revealed them. Many of the ayat will be like that. Okay.
Because somebody wants to make it like this, if the motive or intellect is whosoever wrote written the Quran, but if some circumstances on which Prophet ﷺ said something, okay, according to that is the collection of those things on that particular issue.
What they are trying to do is basically make the law restricted to the past and not to the present. What they are trying to say, even though all of the Muslims and the Sahaba and the Khulafa Rashidin, everyone implemented those rules as generic. Even that, they want to nullify all of that and say, no, it is specific to an incident. And therefore, it cannot be applicable today. That's what they want to end up saying, basically. And want to say that Ahkam are not possible to apply today because they are relevant to only certain causes. So that is why in the professor of Islamiyat here in Jamia Millia, our brother Imran Bhai, when he was in the class, when they'd ask about the khimar and the jilbab, the Muslim woman, he said, no, this is related to the time of the Prophet. Not today. Today it is just modesty, you wear whatever you want. So they ask, can we wear sari? We can, yes, you can wear whatever. And he is a so-called professor of Islamic studies. This is the issue what they are coming with. Even though the text is... even though to believe in that is kufr, if you believe in that, is disbelief. Because you are disbelieving in the verses which are applicable for humanity. They are not really relevant to that.
So what is the evidence to prove that these kind of...
It is the verses themselves. This is the point. It is the language of the verse itself. The Quran is in the Arabic tongue. Okay? So we cannot say, Kul huwa Allah wa ahad means Allah is true. If I say, it's my opinion, it means Allah is true. It does not mean Allah is true, it means Allah is one. That is, what is the evidence? The language. Okay?
Nee, there are two types of interpretation. There are context. Some of the Quranic ayahs, we draw the meaning of that by considering the context.
No, we must, that is a separate issue. We're going to come to that, about does context affect the hukam. Here we're talking about the hukam. Is it in the applicable only to the situation? Or is it generic? Okay? So the verses, are they related to only the situation or the general? And there are two ways of identifying it. One, I said, is in the wording of the text. The second is if the Messenger took these ahkam in their generality and applied them on every single similar incident. These are the two ways. Okay? So from this, there is a principle which is derived. Okay? The principle is al-ibra bi umumul lafz, la bi khususiyat. Okay, the consideration is from the generality of the expression and not for the specificity of the cause. Okay, basically, meaning
the, that the language that is used is itself evident.
Yes, the generality of the expression, and it cannot be overridden by the specificity of the cause. There may be a specific example by which it was revealed, but if the text is general and the Prophet applied it generally. Okay, then it cannot be relevant to a specific thing. You're talking about something else which is to do with a subject within the subject of qara'in, of indicators, okay? Of if you want to take a meaning, okay, which is contextual meaning, right? Then that is a debate on the subject of qara'in. That is not on this debate of asbab al-nuzul. It comes to a element of that, that if we want to find out the subject accurately, that is why the scholars say to make ijtihad, it is necessary to know the asbab al-nuzul of the verse, if it is relevant or not. Okay? To see whether the verse, here we're talking about the Quran itself, but whether the hukam is related to the incident or not. Okay? And it can be also related to another discussion, it can be related to the subject of manatul hukum, the reality of the rule. So some people like, they think, we were discussing yesterday, hilful qudul. Although it's not from the Quran as a verse, but they take that as an incident and apply it generally to any other incident they have invented. Meaning there was a pact, between the Prophet and the Kuffar before he was a prophet, where there was basically some type of community watch scheme. that when there were people who were coming for Hajj, they were being cheated and looted and all of that. So the Prophet ﷺ entered into an agreement. It was something like, if you see that, you should report it and all this. It's like a community watch. We should have an agreement not to allow this. And the Prophet said after he gave revelation that if I was to face that again, then I would do it again. Yeah? So they say, look, see, the United Nations, we can be part of organization of the Kuffar, being part of the government. So what they are doing is taking the incident and generalizing it to any incident. This is a subject what is known as something else. It is subject of manatul hukum, the reality of the rule. What is actually the reality there of the rule? The reality of the rule is that if you want to apply the hukum exactly today, then for you to be as part of a community watch team with kuffar is no problem. That is simply a simple thing. I mean, if there are people doing some crimes and things like that and you are involved in looking and finding them, that is not a problem. But to be part of the system legislating, that is a completely different something you cannot analogize between them. Yeah? Or like, for example, people say, what is the evidence to take awliya from the kuffar and to allow them to be dominant over us and things like that? They say, look, the Prophet took Abu Talib as a... this is an example. It is not, you know, related to Asbab al-Nuzul. This is related to the reality of the actual rule. Yes, we can take the rule from the Prophet to take a non-Muslim as a guardian, as an individual. It's permitted for protection. So for example, if you are, let us say, you are being chased by some kuffar and by enemies of Islam and something like that, and some non-Muslim invites you into his house and say, come here, I will protect you. You can take that. There's not a problem with that.
Second thing, Abu Talib never said or suggested or tried Huzur Sallam to come in, I mean to make him away from what he's doing. And when they said, he came, he answered, if you will
give yes, right. They tried. He tried to protect
the relationship. Is very clear. If any of you are my protector, tell them, and I'm telling you also. Put sun and the moon in one hand. I am not going to be.
That's right. Leave this path. Yeah.
So this is not because of that protection. You are leaving your deen, your aqidah.
Yes.
So becoming the part of the government, that means you are giving the sovereignty in the hands of Islam.
Yes.
And making this as a dalala.
Fine. What I want you to grasp, because of course from this I have an aim for you to grasp certain points so that you will become stronger in your mentality, is that there is a distinction between Asbab al-Nuzul, okay, which is circumstances of revelation, and the issue of reality of a rule, okay, which is a different discussion altogether, identifying the reality of the rule, and also identifying the qareena, if it is contextual or not, okay. So like the example when the Prophet ﷺ said, whosoever has eaten camel's meat, let him make wudu. This issue is not to do with Asbab al-Nuzul. It is not, Asbab al-Nuzul is to do with Quran. It's to do with the revelation directly, which has revealed in terms of what incident occurred and Allah revealed. This incident is to do with a subject within the understanding the dalil of the sunnah, that what is the meaning? Is it the meaning metaphoric or literal? Yeah? That is the discussion. And then to prove it, you need some argument. Then that is the issue of outweighing the argument in that area. So that is a discussion altogether in itself. Here we are simply talking about the principle of circumstances of revelation. Yeah?
For example, this is that Muhammad decided to not take a particular type of honey.
Yes.
And the ayah comes, how can you make something haram which is halal?
Yes.
So circumstances were this, but it doesn't mean only honey you cannot make haram, for this was for the Zul, because the word is very general.
Yeah. And for example, there is general terminology in the text. It is general, even if in origin it was talking about something else anyway. So like the ayah, وَلَّمْ يَحْكُمْ بِمَا أَنْزَلَ اللَّهُ فَأُولَٰئِكُمُ الظَّالِمُونَ. The verse is talking about the Christians and the Jews. But the wording is general. We take the general hukam. So the text always, we look at it like that. Yeah.
What do you say about that ayah which says that don't recite Quran or Surah Fatiha Kapalibana?
Yeah, don't speak over the Quran. Yeah, when the Quran is recited, remain silent.
So, it is said that the context was that the kuffar used to make a lot of commotion, and because of that, because they knew
that...
don't
want to others to hear.
Yeah, that address was not... was also for Muslim, but it was also addressed to the kuffar.
Yes.
So that they may scared of making commotion. So, people said that it is not right to give this argument regarding
True, but now wait, now where does this argument fit? It is not relevant for asbab al-nuzul because the ayah was not revealed specifically to an incident like that, unless it was, and we can prove that. Rather, the debate now is in the issue of ijtihad, in the debate of what is the indication from the verse. And there are two views, as we know. There is the view of the Shafi'i and the other scholars that yes, it is related to that, and therefore it doesn't mean in general. Also, that it is prohibited to quote over the Quran in terms of like in the Salah, whatever. And there are other scholars who view it is haram to quote over the Quran. There are other scholars who view that it is, you know, detestable and makruh. So there is debate, and that has to be argued, right?
Yeah.
So that is a discussion of something else. It is not relevant to this. So I'm not going to go into that. Yes?
Yeah, because we are. Talking about the
yeah, but you're talking about, we're talking about asbab al-nuzul. Asbab al-nuzul is not about every single contextual thing. You're talking about, does the ayah apply to the kuffar at the time when it was, the argument is that they were trying to attack, you know, speaking over Islam and things like that. So it's condemning them, or is the ayah general? So that is talking about the ayah itself specifically. Is its wording arm? Is it general? Is it specific? That is a different discussion. We're talking about asbab al-nuzul. Asbab al-Nuzul is the circumstances of a revelation. Yeah? That when was the ayah, how was the ayah revealed? That a man came to the Prophet and said, this is my issue. Yeah? Or like somebody committed theft and Allah revealed the ayah about theft. Or Hilal came and Allah revealed the ayah about mu'alana. Okay? And there are many such examples, inheritance, the same thing.
The same thing. That is why I'm saying that the circumstances were so and so. And what kind of inference.
No, but you're not saying that. You're saying something else. Are you saying that that ayah was revealed when that happened? I don't know. Right? If the ayah was revealed, then you would be coming this discussion.
Ayah was revealed.
No, was the ayah revealed in that situation?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah.
That incident occurred and the
ayah
was
in Tafsir Ibn Kathir.
Right. Then in that case, then yeah, it would become relevant. Then in that case, is the ayah's wording general or not?
Yeah, that is why.
There will be a debate amongst the people. We need to look to that. But most likely,
because Allah is gives that it has a very particular meaning, inconsequential meaning because of that circumstances.
Yes. But we must look at the verse. Actually, what does it say? I do not know. I need to look at the verse to determine it. We need to look at the verse. If the ayah, most likely, because most of the verses are general.
They are
not specific to a certain incident. Very few of them are like that. Most of them
are
general inference.
This ayah is also specific in this meaning, in this view.
Okay, we must look at it. We must look at the specific example.
Because this is, you know, we have to solve this problem.
Why?
It's because it's a so much big issue among and
not
we,
a big,
we,
not
we
not
have
a big issue. So you have to like
big issue means among the masses, not for us.
Not
so
really,
we will have to give a clear cut.
Both of the views are legitimate. It is ikhtilaf. There is a view of Abu Hanifa, there is a view of Shafi.
You will enter in these things.
It is not so much as you're portraying as a big issue, huge issue. It is not. We just need to explain to people the root concept that there are different madahib, they are accepted. That is the root issue. Once we prove that, there are different views. Ahlul view is a madhab itself. That's it. Once we have proved that, then all of these matters come into this. Is this an issue ayah qat'i? No. Because the fact there is possibility of debate and differences, they are not called each other kafir on that. It is ikhtilafi. That ends the story.
Mm-hmm.
Is it ikhtilaf? It is muhkam or mutashabih. That's it, yeah? We have to end it like that. That's it. As long as they accept it is ikhtilafi, then say fine, we follow whatever opinion you trust. Then if we want to debate with them in terms of which opinion we follow,
what made ayah qat'i or
salafi? We have discussed that right at the beginning. That the qat'i is from two things. One is in its riwayah, in its thubut, and one is in its dalala, its meaning. Okay? And so that is to do with the language.
Yeah.
So, qul huwa Allahu ahad.
In this ayah, the meaning is not certain.
Yes,
that is why it becomes a matter of
debate. Like, qul huwa Allahu ahad. Say Allah is one. It is impossible to have any other meaning other than that. Okay? Or what Allah said, for example, like certain things, Allah said, and flog them or lash them 100 times. The fact that he specified 100 times, it becomes definite. There is no ambivalence. It is not something maybe. It is clear. It is a clear thing. It is qat'i meaning in the text. Okay. So you know, wahallallahu bay wa haramur riba. Allah has permitted trade and permitted riba. It is qat'i rule here. Yeah. So the issue of whether something is qat'i or not is related to the text itself, in its meaning, in its language. For example, the terms that it used, or like for example, just to give you an appreciation, and you must wash over the head. Now here it is ambivalent. Okay? Because the head meaning what? If I do that, is it the head, is the forehead, this. It is not clear thing. If I say I flash them 100 times, that is a clear thing. If I say the head, or if the wording itself, or if the word used itself is mushtarak, for example, the word in the language can have more than one meaning, like intercourse or touch. So then by definition, the word itself is not definitive. Okay? It is possibility of more than one meaning. So here now we have to look at, to identify something as qat'i, it is to do with the language itself effectively. Right?
There is one view also regarding that, suppose why we get into this kind of thing, that whether the head is front or back or middle. Because there is a hadith, Prophet Muhammad said that Bani Israel get into this kind of matter and they got astray. Like the small astralapi.
No,
that came on the issue of that bachra.
Yeah.
They started asking which type of cow should be.
Yeah, that is pedantic. That is, this is about something completely else, about questioning Allah.
So it became very difficult, and there was only one cow like that in the whole year.
No,
I know the hadith. Let me give you first an usuli answer, because I want you to really grasp, I feel something you are grasping, some of percentage of what is needed here, not really what is needed here. Look, if you are usuli mentality, first you can answer this from a very deep way. One, is this hadith qat'i or dhanni? It is dhanni. So first of all, whatever emanates from that is dhanni, and the qat'i outweighs the dhanni. Right? So we come to the point, this hadith, whatever your meaning is, if there is text, which there are some are qat'i, some are dhanni, and they need to be interpreted, Allah said there is muhkam, there is mudashabih, etc. We need to identify that. We are allowed to identify it. We have to identify it. Otherwise, how can we follow the hukum? And it's far to follow the hukum of Allah. How can we follow it? It becomes far by definition. So, therefore, first of all, the hadith is dhanni. Secondly, in fact, what is its actual meaning? The actual meaning is not that, what they interpret. Because how can there be a conflict in the text? Right? How can there be a conflict in a sahih hadith or in the text? The conflict, first of all, must be reconciled. Okay. How can there be a conflict between the hadith and ijma sahaba completely and so on? We must reconcile it. Was it allowed for the Prophet? Did the Prophet allow ijtihad? Yes. Did the sahaba make ijtihad and differ on the ijtihad? Yes. And it is ijma. So the hadith is not that. The hadith is talking, in fact, even in its wording and in the example, is talking about Bani Israel first, which were people who used to question, they like question Allah. Why is, okay, they used to start questioning everything. What is revealed? Why is this revealed? Why is, right? So we should not be like that. Okay? And, you know, we should just accept it. So the hadith meaning is to do with the attitude of ta'ah, of obedience. Even there is another hadith, the Prophet ﷺ said, do not question too much.
Yeah.
Okay, otherwise everything will be forbidden for you, right? Right? Meaning that, make ta'a, whatever the hukum is, you obey that. Right? You should not start questioning every single
thing. You do not question, otherwise you will get into trouble.
No, yes. At that time, the question was asking from the Huzur Salam, and whatever he will say, ultimately it will become a hukum.
Yes.
Now, it is a stop.
Yes.
Now we are questioning understand the hukum.
Yeah,
it is already there.
That's right.
Be changing.
Exactly. That is good. Also, not only that, questioning the Prophet was not forbidden then to ask him a rule. What is forbidden and what was the Prophet was condemning is the attitude of disobedience or attitude of not following until you know why. You understand that type
keeping
of thing.
Keeping you busy and answering,
you know,
yeah,
so that I can delay.
For example, if the Prophet has said, look, alcohol has been forbidden. Now, there is two types of attitude for that. One is Savitna wa Atana, which is what he is emphasizing. Mm. Other is, oh, why is it forbidden? What is it forbidden? How did Allah forbid it? All of those things.
Now, much quantity.
Right. One is an attitude, yani. You accept it is forbidden, ask question later. Right? You accept it, and then you can ask, okay, well, you know, what is the definition, whatever. That is fine, but the attitude of obedience is
what there is hadith that Bani Israel used to ask this question to the Musa.
Yes, yes.
That's
right.
Also hadith.
That's
they
right.
used to do this thing that they ask so many questions again and again to Musa, that is why they were cursed.
That's right, because they did not want to follow the rule. They want to find a way out always, you know. So here it means simply of obedience. It has nothing to do with this. You cannot apply. See, can you see from an usuli point, you cannot apply like a singular hadith in conflict with the basic fundamentals of the text itself, of the sunnah, of the ijma' sahaba. It cannot be. That is a wrong view. So you will find some authors, they will quote one singular hadith like that to conflict with the entire well-known meaning which is established, right, by multiple evidence.
You say this, say what does it mean when Allah is
Well, basically, in fact, these people have made up their mind and they just want to justify this. They're saying, don't get into these issues, just follow. They're trying to, it is an argument of the people who want ignorance to prevail. I.e. they want you not to question and not to know and these things and not to ask. Because they themselves don't have, not know how to answer. It is an easy way out. You understand? If you ask a scholar these questions, well, a so-called scholar, and he does not know how to answer the point, then he can end up, it is an easy way out. Oh, we should not ask all of these types of things anyway. It is an easy way out for him getting into trouble. He should admit that I do not know. If he does not know, that's a simple way out. You know, instead of making a blunder like that. So, the issue of asbab al-nuzul is this, right? We will look at the wording if it is general, okay? Or if the wording is specific, right? So we must look at the wording of the text and how the Prophet applied it. If the Prophet applied in a general way, of course it is general. It cannot be confined to a specific thing, okay? But if he applied it, did not apply it generally, then we can take the wording on the text is enough also to make it general. Yeah? So that is asbab al-nuzul. Now you will find that there are books, someone may say, where will we find the asbab al-nuzul? There are books compiled by the scholars in the past. The books of asbab al-nuzul, and even in the books of hadith, like in Bukhari,
there is
chapters.
Chapter.
Yeah, like when was the ayat revealed, so the hadith revealed.
Long chapter.
Yes. So those are, they are there, right? And sometimes there may be conflict in that. There may be a debate.
There may be a debate whether the context was this one or that one.
That one. I.e. when was the verse revealed? Was it revealed here or there? Because it is possible the verse may have the verse may have been repeated in one instance, but revealed in another instance.
Yeah.
So that is where the confusion can come. One of the Sahaba may assume it has been revealed in the instance.
Yeah,
because
he did not know it. He was not a Muslim.
He may not know it. That's right, but in fact it was revealed in another instance. So sometimes there is a debate like that. Right? In asbab al-nuzul, just to make you aware of that, you know, people...
And most of the time, the scholars used to explain both the circumstances.
Yes, yes.
Even if this is the way, so this thing, because ultimately whatever meaning is coming.
Yes.
It is general.
Yes.
It is general.
Doesn't matter. Yes.
So it's good sometimes to have more than one circumstances and the meaning is
clear. Yeah, like Ibn Kathir in his Tafsir scholars, they say this verse was revealed at this instant most likely. But there's another view that some say it was revealed at this point.
But anyway, even if.
Yes, then it means there's the book of general. Right? So there are many ayat like that. People sometimes differ on the detail when it was
باب النزول.
The next subject which is important to study, and again these are subjects just to trigger your mind, not necessarily to go into all of the depth here in this session, but just to give you some basic concepts about it, because there is a lot of reading about it that can be done, but just so you make you are acquainted with some of the matters of usul, is the subject of abrogation. Okay, nask, mansukh. Okay, the issue of abrogation is important to appreciate, otherwise we can get into big confusion. Right? Linguistically, abrogation means the deletion or changing the thing and transforming it from one state into another state where it existed in its essence. This is the linguistic meaning.
Yes.
Where you change one thing and transform it to one state into another state, but in its essence it still exists. Right? So, meaning that you could say like a thing like a car. You transform the car, but the essence is still a car, but it's a different type of car. Right? So, this is the linguistic meaning of abrogation. But technically, from a shara meaning here, in the hukum shari issue, it is the address, the khitab of the legislator, i.e. Allah, which prevents the continuance of a hukum shari'i from a previous address. Okay? So meaning that there is a hukum already revealed, and Allah reveals a new hukum which prevents the previous hukum. That is abrogation. Okay? So, for example, when we say, a specific verse is abrogated, does not mean that a verse is deleted from the Quran and you don't recite it. That does not mean that at all. Of course, the verse remains. Okay? But the hukam is abrogated, not the verse. The verse is still remaining as a verse of the Quran, we recite it. It is part of the miracle, it is part of recitation.
It is more exact to say that its hukam is abrogated.
That's
rather
right.
Than
the verse
is
abrogated. Yeah, that is just when we say the verse is abrogated, we mean it's hukam.
Yeah.
That's the issue here. We should be careful about that. Okay. So for example, the verse which we will discuss certain different types of abrogation, like paying sadaqah in front of the Prophet sallam. Okay. That was a hukam before for the companion. Before they used to go and meet the Prophet sallam in private, they should pay sadaqah. Okay. That was a hukam for them. Then it was abrogated. Okay. The hukam also, like there was a verse about the one who commits zina, her punishment, the woman before, was that she should be confined to the house for 1 year.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then later was abrogated by a harsher thing of lashing or killing, depending on the type of zina. Right? So there may be something like that. Okay. So there are different types of abrogation which occurs in the Quran. Okay. Abrogation, we will discuss, also occurs in the Sunnah. But let us understand first of all the types of abrogation, what occur, and that we appreciate it. Okay. First of all, Allah has mentioned the issue of abrogation directly in the Quran itself.
There is ayah that we used to abrogate the previous ayah.
That's right, in Surah Al-Baqarah. Whatever verse revelation do we abrogate or cause to be forgotten, we bring a better one or similar to it. Know you not that Allah is able to do all things. Okay, also, and when we change a verse in place of another, okay, Allah knows the best of what He sends down. The disbelievers say to Muhammad, you are a muftari, a fool, or a liar. Nay, but they do not know, or they know Him not. Right? So Allah here, He has mentioned in three places in the Quran the issue of abrogation. That is why it is an accepted issue. Right? Abrogation, and they include it in the science of usulul fiqh and in the issues which are necessary for the mujtahid to know to make ijtihad, of course. Because if somebody does not know about the issue of abrogation, how can he make ijtihad? Because the verse, its hukam may be abrogated and he's trying to use it as a dalil for something. Okay? He cannot use it, right? If that is the case. So, also abrogation, yes, there are specific examples or types of abrogation, you can say. One is like an abrogation of a hukam of the speech of Allah without an alternative hukam. Right? So Allah may just have obliged something at one point, then He stopped the obligation, but He did not give an alternative rule, a different rule altogether. Right? So let us say, like, example, O you who believe, the verse in Surah 58, verse 12 and 13. When you want to consult a messenger in private, spend something in sadaqah and charity before your private consultation. that will be better and purer for you. But if you find not the means for it, then verily Allah is oft forgiving, most merciful. Are you afraid of spending in charity before your private consultation with Him? If then you do not do it, or you do it not, Allah has forgiven you, at least perform salah and give zakah and obey Allah and His Messenger, and Allah is aware of what you do. Okay? So first the hukum was, when they meet the Prophet ﷺ, they should give salah. Then Allah is saying, no, but if you, you know, do not want to do it, it is not obligation upon you, you should at least make salah and zakah and obey Allah and His Messenger. Meaning His recommendation.
Yes.
He made the salah recommendation, okay, before the consultation.
That's
yeah, right. No. There are two verses. Right?
Okay.
Right. One is after the other. Right. So you may find that normally, sometimes it is there that the first verse is revealed. Then later, time later, Allah reveals the next verse in the same surah, but it is abrogating the first one, hukam, but it's revealed later on. You see the issue. Okay. So we must appreciate that.
Then it becomes very continuous.
Yes. I think also the verse of alcohol, from my memory, if I'm not mistaken, is like that.
Yeah.
Which it talks about, and do not pray when you are drunk. And then it says, and the khamr and the maisar and all those things, the gambling, they are from the handiworks of shaitan. But they were revealed in different times. Okay, or the there are different ahkam.
See, there are three.
Yes,
in the final verse, it is
prohibited. Yes.
This was the first that gambling so and so are from shaitan, and the other one is don't go in prayer when you have done.
That's right. And the first one is alcohol, there is some good in it, some bad in it. Yeah, and this thing. So anyway, it is possible for that to come like that, right? So one is that that type of abrogation when there is speech of Allah or kitab of Allah without an alternative hukam. There may be an abrogation with a lighter alternative. Okay? So Allah, for example, in the Quran, He has talked about the ratio of steadfastness was 1 to 10 and then became 2 to 10. Okay? In terms of jihad. Okay? That if there are 20 steadfast persons amongst you, you will overcome 200. Mm-hmm. If there is 100 steadfast, they will overcome 1,000.
So the first ratio
is there's 20, it looks like a contradiction. And this is the type of thing that
maybe
the kuffar bring. Yeah, the kuffar try to bring this type of thing. Then you see Quran is contradictory. Right? Because the ratio between 20 versus 200 is what? Right? Yeah. And the ratio of 100 to 1,000, yeah, 1 is to 10. Then we see the ratio becomes 2 to 10. Okay, in another verse. So here, people will try to say, look, the two verses are conflicting and contradicting. But it simply means that Allah has given a light alternative now. Okay, that when your situation changed, He knows that there is a weakness in you. Okay, then the situation changed. Right, so here there is that type of abrogation. Also, there may be an abrogation with a similar hukam, but in an alternative one. So the Muslims used to pray towards Masjid al-Aqsa before. Then Allah revealed in the Quran, verily we have seen you turning of your face towards the heaven. Surely we shall turn you to a Qibla that shall please you. So turn your face in the direction of Masjid al-Haram. Okay, and whosoever your people are, turn your face in prayer in that direction. So now the abrogation of the hukam. Right? One was
now we can't see this.
Yeah, now you cannot. Yeah, it means the substitution of the earlier hukam with a new one. And therefore you must follow the new one, not the old one. Okay. Sometimes the abrogation may be with one hukam for a more difficult hukam to apply. Right? So for example, in the beginning of Islam, it was obligatory to confine the woman who committed zina to the house.
And also her dead lashes for zina.
No. That is not abrogation. That is a different type of zina.
Yeah.
So that is the zina of fornication, not zina through marriage.
Adultery has that stoning.
Yeah. Both are.
Fornication has 100.
In English, both of them can be called. If you can specify in English, adultery meaning through marriage.
Marriage.
And
fornication is unmarried.
But in Arabic, zina is zina. Both ways are zina.
Okay.
Adultery is zina and fornication is zina.
But the punishment is also different now.
Yeah, it's different because one is from the Quran, one is from the Sunnah. Okay, so the punishment for the lashing of the fornicator is from the Quran, and the punishment for stoning the ones who have committed zina whilst married, right, is death from the Sunnah. Okay, so that is a different thing. It's not abrogation.
It's just a different rule.
Sometimes it is confusing because in English there is a difference, but in Arabic zina is zina.
But English made for us clear more.
Yes, it can be, but
Arabic has a similar meaning, but
two possibilities. But no, it can be also more confusing because if you read the translation of the Quran and you read the Quran, and you
not
read,
always.
If you read zina, zina can be fornication. So you look at it and say, whoever commits fornication, they should be lashed 100 times, and it can be also adultery. It may be translated as adultery, zina. So zina, it depends on the translation, how they translate it. Okay, so that is an example. Another example of this is abrogation of one who comes from.
सही कहा आपने गोस्टल ओवर है पेडेंटी भी क्या है क्योंकि फोर्निकेशन ही कुछ लोगों ने कहा जब भी इसको डिबेट भी ये तर्जमा होना
That's right. It's better because in English there is that adultery has a clear meaning which means to marriage. So it's better to use the term fornication. Yeah.
Fornication. Definitely.
Because fornication means just it's a more absolute term. Absolutely. It is inclusive of married and unmarried, but unmarried is included within that. But adultery is specific.
Yes.
So anyway, that is a in Arabic, zina is zina. It means one thing. Zina is
either married or unmarried.
Yeah, but the hukam is different.
Yeah.
So hukam for unmarried is 100 lashes from the Quran, and from Sunnah is stoning. So this is not abrogation. This is just two different ahkam for two different issues, reality. Whereas the issue in English, we were just saying in English, when you say adultery means the one who is married and committed, and fornication means the one who is unmarried. It can also mean the one who is unmarried, but adultery means it has to be married. So we make it more clearer when we say the adulterer, we must stone them to death, and the fornicator, we lash them. So it makes a distinction here. But the term zina is more general than that. So that is an example then, of course. Another example is, of course, initially it was obligation to fast the day of Ashura for the Muslims. And later then the Prophet ﷺ, when it was revealed, to fast the Ramadan. Okay? So then the day of Ashura became recommended. Okay. Before it was obligatory in Makkah.
Before Ramadan?
Yeah.
Before the Mukam first.
No, that Ashura was first. Yeah?
Then Ashura all 10 days.
No, the day of Ashura, just the day when Musa defeated Fir'aun, one day, was first. So here is an example of a lighter hukam alternative with a more harsh, more difficult one. Because fasting Ramadan is more difficult, right, than the original rule. So that is just an example or type of abrogation in terms of that, okay. Now, so these are examples of different types. Then there are categories, okay, of abrogation of the Quran with the Quran. Okay. First of all, in our view, only the Quran can abrogate the Quran. The Sunnah cannot abrogate the Quran, even if it is mutawatir. Okay? Because Allah has said in the Quran, okay, about the verse that if we will substitute a verse for another one. Okay? So this is our view. And also other scholars have that view. But there are some scholars who view that the Quran, that they believe abrogation is, but they believe only mutawatir sunnah. They say like for like. Only like can abrogate like. Okay? So they say that because the Quran is mutawatir, and the sunnah, the hadith which are mutawatir are also mutawatir, they are the same category. So the mutawatir can abrogate the mutawatir. But we do not accept that because of the verse in our view. But there is some difference of opinion.
But I think
there is
some issue also.
Is there any example
abrogating? The example of Quran abrogating, no, they cannot be. That is the thing, we will not accept it. This is the issue. If somebody accepts it as a principle, that is why usul affects the ahkam. If somebody accepts in principle that the sunnah can abrogate the Quran, then they can get to a different opinion. Then we will get, if there is an example, when they try to argue that the sunnah abrogates the Quran. But we would say no, the Sunnah cannot abrogate the Quran. I will give you an example, but it's from Khabar Ahad. I don't know of an example of Mutawatir. Rarely you will find a contradiction in Mutawatir. Normally it is impossible. Because Mutawatir is definitive. How will there be a conflict in definitive thing? Right? But there is an example of Khabar Ahad conflicting with the Quran, therefore we reject it. Okay? We will come to that later. So the issue of Quran with Quran is like an example of Sadaqah, the verse about Sadaqah. Okay? The verse about Sadaqah.
Most of the examples we have.
Yeah, we have taken Quran with Quran, okay. Also, here, those of you die and leave their wives, bequeath for their wives, the years maintenance, and residence without turning them out, okay. This is, and then he said, and those of you die and leave their wives behind them, their wives should wait for 4 months and 10 days, i.e., that the issue became, the idda period became there. Right?
3 months, no?
4 months and 10 days.
Idda of wife and husband died?
No, it's 4 months and 10 days. Yeah? So the idda has been changed from 1 year. Before the idda was 1 year. Okay? That has been changed to 4 months. So that is abrogation, Quran by Quran. So we don't accept Mutawatir by consent to this. Now,
we don't have an example.
There is no example. I cannot think of one, and it would be very, very rare to find it. Because normally, Mutawatir will not conflict with Mutawatir. The Mutawatir Hadith will not conflict with the Quran.
But did not there was a conflict coming on since the time of the Prophet? If there is an example of the Mutawatir contradicting with Quran,
yes.
That means one conflict is coming.
Yes, I need to look at the books of the scholars if they give an example. I cannot think of one offhand, right? And I could not find one.
Of it's very good if there is none.
Yes, because it further establishes the proof.
There is also some sunnah which abrogate means even there is a like mutta nikah. So there is no
sunnah abrogate sunnah. We will talk about that. Yeah, and also. Sunnah can make specification. That is something else, not abrogation. We will talk about that. So, Sunnah can abrogate Sunnah. So, for example, this Mutawatir can abrogate Mutawatir.
So, you have not given example even of Ahad.
No, but I am coming to Khabar Ahad. I am first saying Mutawatir. I am saying Sunnah abrogate Sunnah. There are two different types of Sunnah. So, first, Mutawatir can abrogate Mutawatir. Fine. Okay? And Ahad can abrogate Ahad, and Mutawatir can abrogate Ahad, but Ahad cannot abrogate Mutawatir. Okay?
Yeah.
Because it's like for like, because Mutawatir is definite and Ahad is singular, okay, or less than definite. Therefore, it cannot abrogate something definite, right, by definition. But the definite can abrogate the indefinite. So the Mutawatir can abrogate Ahad, but not the other way around, right? And of course, the Ahad can abrogate the Ahad. For example, the Prophet said, I used to forbid you from visiting graves, now you should visit them. Yeah? So it's abrogation. Before you will find the Hadith, the Prophet says, do not visit the graves. Okay? So it is abrogation in the Sunnah. Okay. I used to forbid you from storing away the sacrificial meat because of the large crowds. Now you may store it as you wish. Okay?
Yes.
So it is an abrogation, but I'm just thinking of Mutta actually. If it is it's originally from the Quran, was it abrogated from the Quran? No, it's abrogated in the Sunnah. Yes. It was permitted in the Sunnah and abrogated by the Sunnah. Yeah? So it was the actions of the companions of the Prophet.
Some people have viewers, even Musa Maulana Maududi also has this view that if there is something different kind of situation like people to marry female court in an island and they have.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with Musa. That is to do with the ahkam of Nikah, who then will come under the issue of the it is impossible for you to achieve the full condition. Therefore, you achieve the basic of the rule. Okay? So, that is nothing to do with Musa at all. So, if you are two people on the island, there is nobody there and you together, then of course, it is first the issue of. You can get married without witnesses because it's impossible to get witnesses. Right? And first of all, to get witnesses are actually conditioned for the validity of making the nikah, the, you know, not fasted, right? But in origin, offer and acceptance is the basis. So, when you still get married, but you get married by yourself.
This is the easier one. Yes, it is known that if even nikah can be conducted
like that, yes. But it will not be correct, will be sinful.
Not for the married one. The nikah, two guys,
yes,
who are not married, and they are in this situation.
Yeah, they end up in a they end up in an island. That is not the muta. Muta is what we call temporary marriage. Temporary marriage's definition is the marriage with the intention of divorce. That is the definition of muta. That is the definition. Muta is not marriage based on time. It is theoretically possible. In the newspaper the other day, one guy got married the same day, the same night, he sent Allah to her and he finished.
In Hindi film, it comes very much to do halala, another haram thing. No halala, no?
No.
Halala is basically if you given talaq to your wife.
Yes.
Now you want to marry.
Yes.
So there is one way only, somebody should marry.
And divorce again.
Yeah, so his brother married.
But that is nonsense. That is all haram.
Yeah. So,
this is the thing. So, marriage with the intention of divorce is prohibited today, of course. Where you marry and you think, okay, next day I will divorce her. Yeah? Basically, it is that is how they justify
prostitution. And if both of them are marrying, with this intention. Because
both of them may do. It doesn't matter. The thing is forbidden itself. Yeah. You must marry to fulfill the marriage. If you get divorced, that is a different issue.
Yeah.
So, you cannot marry like that. The Shia, they do, but it is a batil. They do many things which are not valid altogether.
No, I want to know if there is dominant belief or.
Yes, dominant. If they do it in Iran, the Isna Ashari Shia, they believe it. They do it.
Muta. There are some legitimate.
Not legitimate. They do not accept this hadith. That's the issue. That's their problem because of their own bias of the companion. So they will.
Okay, the letter of these.
Of course.
So they think this is.
Right. And because Ali permitted it at that time when he was permitted, then they will say that's it. That is more the lead for them. So things like that, you know, it is. So it is not permitted. The Shia's view is invalid. Like some of their views are invalid completely.
I think there is no Sunni who believe in this.
I cannot think of anyone. There may be some dodgy.
No, but now it is clear. Yes. Why they do this?
Yes.
This should also be clear.
That's right.
Not only because we are doing this.
Yes.
They have also some basis. Also
that basis is wrong. Because
the basis is wrong. It's been abrogated.
Also that basis is wrong.
They don't accept the abrogation of it. Yes. They accept that the rule is still validated. Yeah.
And again, the reason for that is they have since the another Ali supporting that is of that Ali.
Yes.
So
they consider it
that
hadith.
That is stronger for them.
Yes.
Stage.
Exactly.
The judgment.
That's right. But they believe it is a dalil, which itself is wrong as a concept. But anyway, because they take the sunnah as, not the sunnah as we take it, they take the sunnah of the infallible altogether as dalil. So the saying of Ja'far al-Sadiq is equal to a hadith from the Prophet. For them. Yeah, so it is a deviant view. Not accepted. But we can understand hadith, we can appreciate where they come with this thing. Right.
But for us, it is to see that Ali gave this judgment or gave this statement before the hadith of abrogation came or after.
Even if he gave it after, doesn't matter, it is not an evidence. Even if there is a report that he gave it after, it's irrelevant because the hadith is what is taken, not the saying of a companion. It is possible he does not know the rule. There are many examples like that. Yeah. Ali, he burned people with fire. Then Ibn Abbas said, don't you know that the Prophet ﷺ said, do not punish with the punishment of Allah. And Ali said, okay, I will not do it. Then people started to worship him, the Zoroastrian people, when he became the ruler, and other people. So he burnt them, right? He killed them because they're committing, this thing. And Ibn Abbas condemned him, so you should not do that. Because the Prophet said, do not use fire, it is the punishment of Allah. You should use other methods. So then he realized. So meaning it is possible the companion did not know of some hadith. Umar radiallahu anhu, I think Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, one of the companions, knocked on his door 3 times, then started to walk away. Umar came out. Where are you going? He said, the Prophet said, that you should knock three times and go away. He almost said, bring me a witness who says this also, otherwise I will punish you for that. And then he was sweating. He started to sweat. And the companions came to him and said, what is wrong? He said, that have you heard the Prophet ﷺ say this? They said, yes, we have all heard it. Then Omar was okay. Right? You understand? That they did not know sometimes of a hadith. Right? So, doesn't matter. The sayings of the companions cannot be taken as evidence over
this,
the
Prophet. This same hadith is that even the Prophet prophet companion doesn't know about hadith. How it may be possible that these imams like Anaf and Fa, they were not well
aware. True, but we have to understand something. The companions were mujtahid. So when they heard a hadith, they understood its meaning in its language, in its things.
And the reality is very different for the mujtahid and reality for
the layman.
Was very different. Now everything is compiled and given.
That's right.
And that time it was on the heads of the people.
Exactly. People did not know all the narration. Now everything is compiled. And therefore, yes, it is possible. We are not saying that what the extremist Taqlidi people who say, no, the poor scholars, whatever they say cannot be contradicted. We are not saying that. We are saying, yes, there may be a hadith which they did not know and it conflicts with their opinion. Therefore, we follow the ijtihad based on the dalil, not based on the individual. Right? But the issue is that we must follow ijtihad, not just ourselves. Right? Because that is the
point. All four imams are barhaq. They are in haq.
Yeah, and this,
that is why it is said.
Yeah, it is because the extremists are Taqlidi people. That let us finish quickly because we are finishing time. So abrogation by sunnah, abrogation of the sunnah by the Quran. Okay, so the Prophet ﷺ used to tell the Muslim to pray towards Al Quds. Allah abrogated that. So the abrogation of sunnah, the sunnah can be abrogated by Quran. Allah said then, go towards Masjid Al Haram. Also, Allah also having sexual intercourse at night was haram. For the one who fasted during the day, according to the Sunnah, the Prophet forbid to make intercourse at night. But then Allah permitted that he have sexual relations with them after the fasting. Okay, it is permitted. The fast of Ashura was established by the Sunnah but abrogated by the Quran. Right? So that is the type of abrogation. Okay. Also, initially in the Battle of Khandaq, the Prophet was allowed to leave the prayer, leave the salah, and this was abrogated by the Quran about Salatul Khawf. Meaning, in the battle, sometimes they used to leave the salah, and the Prophet said that in the hadith, may Allah fill their graves from fire, they prevented us from praying the salah. Okay, but it was abrogated later. Allah said, when you are among them, leave them in salah. It's talking about war. In the war is the fear, the Salatul Khawf, the prayer of fear, is known as. You still pray. Okay, but you get people to God, the people to pray and things like that. That brings you to pray. So, there are examples like that. Now, two more points that we will end. That abrogation cannot occur by Ijma' al-Sahaba. Because it makes no sense. Ijma' al-Sahaba is nothing to do with abrogation. Okay, because in fact, the Ijma' al-Sahaba is that the companion, it indicates that they knew something of a sunnah which we do not know. So it's not about abrogation. Abrogation is when there is, in the time of the messenger, there is a rule revealed, then another rule is revealed which abrogates. Ijma' al-Sahaba means after the Prophet was gone, they do something which indicates they knew of a dalil that we do not know. So in fact, Ijma' al-Sahaba is an indication of the sunnah itself. It has nothing to do with abrogation. So for example, we cannot say that the Prophet ﷺ, when he died, they did not bury him for 3 days, so therefore it is an abrogation. It is not abrogation. It is just an indication that they knew of something of the sunnah which we do not know, because they cannot commit en masse a prohibited thing. Allah has praised them as a whole. So therefore they knew of the sunnah. So abrogation does not occur in Ijma'. That is accepted, everybody accepts that. Also, abrogation cannot therefore also occur in Qiyas. Okay? Because the qiyas is only recognized qiyas is when there is a shari'i illa in the text system. So there is no abrogation that occurs by qiyas. There is simply an ijtihad or derivation from